Like most programs, there's a lot of people involved, and I just happen to be the spokesman, but down on the bottom, Dr. Jenkins and USERRA are our evaluators, Mel Prairiechik and Robert Burke, John Gordon, Dace Price, Mike Sear, Crystal Malloy are our out in the field actually doing the activities. Basically, some aspects, we're in a rural community. South Dakota itself is a rural community. It has about 750,000 people. The two biggest areas are actually Sioux Falls with 125,000 and Rapid City, where we're from, with 75,000. And because there are no people, there's a definite lack of resources, both from ability to find health facilities themselves, doctors, everything, to even social things like entertainment, movie theaters. Some of the smaller towns, there's absolutely nothing. You have to drive hundreds of miles to find the hospital. So it provides some unique situations. Mobility, in the area that we're from, Rapid City, there's a lot of back and forth from Rapid City to the reservation. There's about three reservations in and around the western South Dakota where we're from. Stance on reproductive health. South Dakota, as you may have heard a couple years ago, had the big abortion legislation that made the news. And then that same time, even on the state level, there was legislation being proposed to make it criminal to do comprehensive reproductive health. Luckily, we got by both of the things. But it does play, it's very conservative, and reach, as you might guess, it causes some havoc with what we're trying to do. Transportation, there is no mass transit. Obviously, you can't afford to have a bus for four people. So getting from one point to the other, besides having the distance to facilities and clinics and everything else, there's just no public transportation, so you have to rely on your own car. And then South Dakota also has one of the highest levels of head of households having more than one job. So as a result, a lot of latchkey kids at home. In the majority of South Dakota, finding a job is not a problem, and adequately paying job is a big issue. On the reservation, on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation, it happens to be the poorest county in the whole country. There's some things to deal with. Our program started in 1999. Basically, we serve boys and young men, basically most of them between 5 and 17. We have two components. One is a health education component, and the other one is the advocacy case management type component. We're out of Rapid City, South Dakota. Our catchment area is western South Dakota, and we're funded from a grant from the Office of Population Affairs. It's a Title X grant. I'm going to speak primarily about our curriculum, Wise Guys, and this curriculum was actually developed from Family Life Council out of North Carolina, and that's what we use in a variety of settings, and that's one of the challenges that we have. We do classroom presentations at the middle school and high school level. Our plan is to initiate a good base of information at the middle school and then highlight more specific stuff at the high school level. At the high school level, we just start off right out front saying that you guys know 80 to 90% of this stuff, but you have 10 or 20% of it messed up, and that's enough to make you dad. And then we try to hit some misnomers, you know, the yellow dye in Mountain Dew or what pot does to sperm counts, and then they go, oh, I guess I didn't have that right. And that gets them hooked. We also have on the reservation, there's three types of schools. There's a BIA or contract schools, private schools, which would mean religious based, and then public schools. So they all have their own little things, hurdles you have to go over. Again, the every single school principal has the authority to tell you what you can do and where their comfort level is. So some schools want us to do absence only. Some want, you know, please tell them everything. And one way that we've gotten around the abstinence-only caveat is to talk the schools into letting us answer questions. And so we hand out little pieces of paper to everybody in the school, in the classroom, and they have to turn one in. Whether they write a question or not, it's up to them. But kids will ask a lot more than I would ever present normally. So it opens the door to give a comprehensive approach. We also do after-school programming. And as you guys have learned, you know, it's hard to sit for an hour and a half, especially on the floor. And I don't know how kids stand it through the whole day. I blocked it out. But we have to do a more interactive kind of programming after school. Otherwise, they'll just doze off on you. Again, like, you know, people have mentioned before, food always works. And then the activities are more interactive, ropes-based activities to learn a lesson. Basically, playing a game and having a moral to the game so that they can learn something. Then in the schools, to get into the schools, even though we're a male-based program, they want us to teach both sides. Go figure, sex, two sides. So we do some of the classes. We're male only, where we have a PE class or health class, and it's just males, and we teach the females separately. Some are co-ed, and whenever we do a co-ed class, especially at the middle school level, we get somebody to help us out, so we have at least one day where we can address the more intimate sexual educational components without a lot of giggling, and we can get and answer their questions more directly without them being embarrassed or trying to perform to the whole class. And then the last, we do special populations such as for the Department of Corrections and some special groups. And then we have our educational program coupled with case management or advocacy. The advocacy component, basically we have about 150 or 160 boys that we run through this advocacy program. They're assigned a mentor or a advocate, and we go through a needs assessment with the parent and the boy present, and basically try to figure out, you know, what issues need help. We address mental health, physical health, sexuality through teaching that Wise Guys class. There's a Big Brother component, the mentoring component, and as the thing I went to before this, you know, the having an adult that you can relate to has proven to be quite crucial. So that's actually one of the biggest components of the advocacy part. Whenever you help kids, you end up helping the whole family. So we don't sidestep that. We address it straight on. Socialization, most of these boys are referred in by counselors, school counselors, maybe Department of Social Services. They don't have so good of social skills. And so we do a lot of interactivity. So in the summer, we do a lot of hiking, camping, fishing, the tough part of the job. And then during the school year, it's more of that class that we do. But we have outings, and then they can learn some social skills, and it's proved to be quite good. And then we help them with their academics. They're referred from the school. Internally, our agency is a Head Start agency for Western South Dakota. We get referrals in from Department of Social Services, Department of Corrections. Numbers-wise, the human sexuality classes is just males, but basically about 1,200 males are given the Wise Guys curriculum on an annual basis, and a little bit less, probably about 48% to 52% is the ratio of males to females, but so all set around 2,500 people take our Wise Guys class. The advocacy, again, runs around 160 boys every year. Right now, as of March, we're at 149, so it might be more than that now. The ethnic breakout of the advocacy program, 56% basically white, American Indian 37%, African American 2%, other 4%, unknown, which, go figure, I don't know. Maybe they're in the Mars program. Client needs. For the advocacy program, basically that social aspect, these are the top ones. Social, education, and mental health are the biggest issues. The Wise Guys curriculum itself has 10 units or chapters. We, at the school level, we usually are in the schools for a 5-session, you know, Monday through Friday, 1 class hour. So we usually combine 2 chapters at one time. And then in the in-house and special population presentations, we can go through the complete 10 units. First one is basically, you know, self-esteem, self-image type things, values, personal values, family values, where you get your values, media influence on values, masculinity, you know, what does it mean to be a man, and kind of hitting the tough guy's aspect, and breaking down some of those stereotypes. Sexuality, which would be basically the biology. Dating violence, this is more emphasized, you know, at the high school level, and it also is effective relationships, not just violence. And then at the middle school, instead of spending so much time on relationships, we go through the puberty thing. Then effective communication skills, again, effective communication skills include refusal skills, finding an adult that they can trust, parents, all that kind of communication. STIs, abstinence and contraception, decision making, goal setting, and then the cost of parenthood. Basically, we try to sell it on the premise that, you know, having a family and stuff is cool, but just wait, do all that selfish stuff first. You know, get the car, go to college, travel, do all that fun stuff, and then settle down. So we try to sell it instead of saying, don't do this and do that. More like, you know, you told me you want to do all these things, so do it, you know, and be selfish. And it seems to be effective. Measured domains. Basically, we do pre-post survey. We have a control group, another middle school that used to not want us, but now they do, so it adds problems. But we just shifted it, so we'll only teach the 8th grade. But the survey is broken down, dealing with communication, personal responsibility, decision-making, self-respect, values, and then the reproductive health components. And our findings basically indicated that in 5 of the 6 sexuality items, we showed a significant change. And 3 of the 6 items at the middle school level dealing with sexuality, we made a significant change. There is a significant improvement in 4 of the 6 human sexual items at the high school level. And then this is urban, but that's kind of a misnomer. I mean, that's that town of 75,000. But the boys from our city, compared to the more rural areas, kind of deals with that. And it's more that on the reservation, there's just we talk about self-esteem, and it would just be like, what is it? I mean, it was not just a lack of, it was an absence of. And then there isn't anything to do. I mean, so on, you know, in some rural areas, there's no thing to do on the weekends. You know, 6-pack in the back seat of the car is an entertainment. So, I mean, there's just not alternatives. The last one, or one of the last ones, 71 of the advocacy boys surveyed, 80.7% thought they were a good person. Bigger improvement with communications, both with adults and other adults. Not having sexual intercourse. The thing of note here is that the education only, there was an improvement, but modest. And then on the advocacy boys, more significance. And that's something that would be good to explore at a later date. Basically, you know, the advocacy is more expensive, so you have to do a cost-benefit kind of analysis on it. But, you know, does that whole holistic approach, I mean, that's a big difference in the impact, and basically to find out if it's worthwhile. Adult learners, basically, we do a lot of stuff in treatment facilities, and by adult learners, we're talking mid-20s. And they're usually involved in chemical alcohol treatment facilities, and they seem to be satisfied. Strength of the advocacy model, that they develop a strong relationship with that advocate. They're usually in the program for about a year, but we've had some that have gone, and when they, you know, decide to make a career, they come and talk to the advocate, or they'll have that continued conversation and relationship years after they've left the program. We do love and logic, parenting education for the parents. they develop those social skills by, you know, the activities that we do as a group, which helps them get some social skills. And again, we're taking that holistic approach. The boys are monitored during participation in the Boys Health Program. However, follow-up's always tough, and you know, you lose track of them. The advocacy ones, we have enough of a base of information where we could track them down and do more of a longitudinal study. We do have a unique identifier at the school level, but as I mentioned, there's that mobility from the reservation to the city to the reservation, and at the middle school level, it's like 45-48% aren't there next year. So, you know, even though we have a unique identifier to do follow-up at the high school level, you know, it's tough. And then, you know, some other future implications. The differences between, from a learning standpoint and a retention standpoint, between males and females, you know, the way they learn. I think our effectiveness with that Wise Guys curriculum is based on the fact that it's very interactive, you know, ropes-based. You know, if you can have fun and learn something, that's pretty cool. The other thing that we would like to do in the future, you know, as all of you probably know, sexual activity at the middle school, high school level, you know, they're drinking or smoking or doing something. And a better coordination of efforts from a prevention, almost a holistic prevention standpoint would be good. That'd be it.
Infatuation could be the base of getting shut down and not even knowing where. draw what we called an asset map of that school to look for all of the people and the places in that school where we can embed messaging and information about men's sexual health and identify who those people were and where those places were. And so we have a floor-by-floor map of the school, and it's things like the school newspaper. We can do articles around the young men's clinic. We can go to the sports teams and offer them up sports physicals at our clinic. We can get warm-up uniforms that they wear for the sports teams to be young men's clinic sweatshirts with our logo. We can reach out in a variety of ways. And I have to say, it has been just enormously successful in terms of us directly observing the kids who are now coming into the clinic for visits. And I think it is an idea that is really possible to just roll out. It didn't take a lot to get, because we were demanding nothing of the school. They needed to give us zero for us to offer them something. And our experience in the urban area that we're in has been the schools are quite concerned about these issues, and they're really aware that to the extent it's getting serviced at all, it's for their female students and not for the males. So this saturating schools with messages and information and linkages is a real possible model, even if you can't get into classrooms.
Dr. I have a question. For Jackie, I run a peer education program in New York City, and I have a really hard time recruiting male peer educators. How do you recruit your male peer educators?
Well, that's a really good question. So we're fortunate in that our health department is located just a few blocks from Oregon State University. However, you know, I'll say also that in the other two counties where we are, Jackson and Deschutes County, Jackson
with county health, and so there's a government factor involved. And we too are looking at the Department of Ed, Department of Health, to get that going. And as an agency, we're focusing more on not grant-specific funding. So if for a small, successful program that doesn't have a larger agency behind it, it's tough. And it doesn't seem like it's the best of ideas to reinvent the wheel every time. So if you could change that, that'd be cool.
Okay, I'm going to follow up with a plug for the Men's Reproductive Health Task Force that's meeting this evening from 6 to 7 in room 141. And we have some publications on Men's Engage that we'll be distributing. And if any of you want to join us, we'll also be going out for dinner after the meeting to continue that and to start planning for next year. Get this going, growing.
Okay, there's a question back there that seems impassioned.
Thank you.
workforce readiness and development and GED programs. You know, we could have a long conversation about how that money is being spent, but it is available and the programs proliferate. The other place in the community that I don't think sexual health, men's sexual health has reached out to is there's all sorts of money now going into fatherhood initiatives and organized programs to reach men. Now, a lot of it is basically to collect child support. And it's, you know, or, so these are complex settings to connect to, but they are possible venues to partner, and then we can embed some of the good stuff we have to offer. We are much more interested, and Bruce is leading us along the way, of trying to connect economic development for disenfranchised men and the health together, rather than having them be separate worlds and separate infrastructures. The last thing I'm going to say on my side about sustainability, because we worry about that a lot, and it's, you asked the question, it's a good time because the 5 years of OPA funding is about to end. So we're all thinking about sustainability. One of the other community initiatives that we've done is something that we call capacity building. Instead of relying on us having outreach workers that we can embed in every relevant CBO in Northern Manhattan and the Bronx, what we're trying to do is to go into CBOs and do basic training with intake workers there primarily to ask men questions about health and have these questions. And we have gotten CBOs to change their intake form, which is no small task. And these are work readiness CBOs, workforce development, GED. So they embed in the intake form questions about when's the last time you got a health check, do you have a usual health care provider. Based on the answers to those questions, the intake worker is then trained with the skills to do a brief conversation with the man and then a referral. So if we can start doing that, it takes less pressure on us to have the kind of outreach staff that up till now we felt the need to have. Now, the downside of that is these intake workers change jobs every 3 weeks. So we trained a set of them a couple of months ago, and 4 out of the 5 have transitioned out. So we're now training the people who will train the new intake workers so that this gets better. But we are all trying to think creatively about what we can do that is sustainable. Other questions? There's one in the back.
Classroom.
websites. We'll give you our websites, which still have materials. Afterwards, we'll tell you what they are.
Well, thank you all very much for coming. It's a wonderful.